Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, you are listening to Just Films and That. This is the podcast where we celebrate films we think are underrated, underseen, or we just wanted to talk about them. I'm Josh Hallam, and I'm joined, as ever, by the lovely Alice Oliver. How are you, Alice?
Lovely. A real emphasis on the word lovely there as well. It gets more flattering every week, listeners. I'm very well, thank you, Josh. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. I'm good. We are joined by another fantastic guest, Alice.
Another one. We're so lucky.
We are. We're very lucky. We are joined by the wonderful Athena Kablenu. How are you, Athena?
I'm very well, thank you. Are they all fantastic though, really?
Do they
start off fantastic, and by the end you're like, oh, we'll have to edit the fantastic bit out, you know?
Yeah. Let's try and think who wasn't fantastic. There's loads of them. All of them, really. None of them ever come back to us and listen, so you're all rubbish, except for Athena.
That's right. That sounds about right.
But no, we are of course very excited to have you on. We always like to throw in guest episodes. We usually do about one a month, don't we, Alice? And It's one of the real joys, I think, of this podcast is chatting to people about films because everyone always responds with like, I've got something. And it never really gets old for me. That's one of the things I really enjoy about doing this.
Everyone's got their film, the one that they think, why the hell does nobody like this? Or why has nobody heard of this? And it's always just great to have those conversations. Good thing we like films, eh, Josh?
It is a good thing we like films. Otherwise, why have we done over 100 episodes of this?
So
we always start with a completely random question to get things moving. So I'll come to you first, Alice. So this one, I put it out on Twitter and Instagram for our listeners to ask for questions.
Got a listener suggestion question. Yeah, very nice.
So despite the fact that I said not film related, got about 5 film ones, so that was useful.
People are thick, you know.
I'll put that out. Hang on. Athena says people are thick.
There's no point denying it. Like, we're all a bit dense. Like, sometimes I think, my goodness.
A lot of people, do you really think The Godfather is the greatest? I can't. That's not a random question to start a podcast with. But this is from The Doc on Twitter, and he said, what are the 5 must-haves on a full English or Alice Welsh breakfast?
They are 2 very different things.
They are.
5 things. Go on, sorry.
So I'll come to you first, Alice. What would you say? So Alice, are you still vegan or are you veggie or what are you this week? I can't remember.
So I'm veggie at the moment. Right, okay. So is toast a given or does toast have to be one of the 5?
Let's put that to the panel because I feel like toast is a bit like tea. Like it's there. It should be there.
Yeah.
But some people would say, not what would you say, Athena?
I think if you're eating it, it's part of the breakfast. It doesn't count because it's not on the plate. No. If you're eating it, it's part of the breakfast. Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, how many sides are you gonna have? Like, that's crazy,
right,
man.
Do chips count?
Crazy.
Yeah. Does halloumi count? No, you're right. Good. Exactly. Keeping us on the straight and narrow. We're not gonna get too crazy.
Salt doesn't count, right? Because that's like
condiments and seasoning are additional. It's like Wetherspoons when you go and you get your food. You can get all your condiments. Like that's the best part, really. Yeah.
Okay. All right,
unless you're in a big Wetherspoons and you sit down and go, oh, fuck's sake.
Oh, you've got to go to the... It's always by the toilets about 3 miles away.
I'll see you in 45 minutes, everybody.
Always dead sticky as well. So toast doesn't count. All right, so I'm going to ignore the toast then. I'm going to go toastless. So the 5 things would be hash browns, eggs, beans, spinach and mushroom.
I hate beans. As I've said this before, I can't stand baked beans. Ketchup and beans, which I know are big for a lot of people on a full English breakfast. I don't know why. You know, like, if you ever have a food, like if it touches your other food when it comes by mistake, you're like, I feel like I can't have this now.
I don't really care about that. Like I mash it all together, it. You know, I'm disgusting it. Me a little bit. Yeah.
Just a big milkshake, just all
yeah.
in one.
Yeah, blend it all.
So what was
I
that
remember
then?
Actually. So you said, I remember oh, actually, Josh, wasn't there a story about you were so desperate to not have beans brought to you on your
thank
plate
you
in your
for,
restaurant
thank you
that
for
you
this
said
up.
You were allergic.
I did.
So then the was, people in the restaurant had to be like,
I think
we can't
it
give
was,
you anything.
I think it was in between one of the lockdowns when restaurants right. reopened and you could go in. Might not have been. I feel
can
like
I just
it was,
ask a question?
Though.
What restaurant were you in? Were you ordering beans? I've never gone
so,
to
no,
a restaurant.
So,
was
so
this
we went
for your
to,
dinner?
We went for breakfast. It's, right. it's the reverse. So we went to a Bill's for breakfast.
Oh,
right,
the
breakfast.
Yeah,
sorry.
And
right.
I ordered a bacon, eggs, and a full English. And I said to them, I have a big thing where I feel like if you say, put no beans, please. They just don't listen and go,
he
can just
beans,
he
yeah.
can just scrape them off. Fuck this guy.
She said, a bean could kill me. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Listen,
get me. I went, I can't have beans. I'm allergic to them. And the waitress went, I can't serve you then.
Yeah.
And I went, what? And she went, and it was something to do with, because my partner was working for a company at the time that did training courses for like restaurants and stuff. And she said, yeah, there's some new legislation where if you say you're allergic and they didn't know before you went or something like that, that they can't serve you.
Mm, it's a cross-contamination,
so,
man.
So I had to proper, with my tail between my legs, go, I'm not allergic to beans. I'm just really
so
fussy.
So funny.
And she looked
it's
at me
okay
like...
It's okay to be fussy.
Oh, yeah, but not if you lie. Like, just tell
but
the
you know
truth.
What? You owned up to it and you told the truth in the end,
and she,
Josh.
And she
and
did
that,
serve me. She didn't
listeners.
Kick me. I haven't been back.
No, never go back to Bill's. But that is a good moral to the story. Anyway, I digressed a little bit just because of that funny story that I just had to share with everyone. Josh, what is yours? I've got a feeling this is going to be meat heavy.
Yeah, and you know, that sounds like such a stereotype of an English northern bloke. Well, bacon, obviously, with everything. Bacon, egg of some kind, poached or fried, happy with either.
Mm.
Sausage, black pudding. Hash brown.
Yeah.
Because I can do it without the toast. If you do it properly, you don't need the toast. And it always goes cold.
Mm.
Or you eat it first, depending on what you think. What about you, Athena?
So I feel like the person who asked that question knows me because I'm on record as saying the English breakfast is just nonsensical. It's just, it's literally just pig. Who eats? Why are we eating this at breakfast? Like, have you ever just stopped to look at a plate of English breakfast food and just look at it? Why are we eating this? The variations of pig on it's just that's what makes me laugh the most. So I am on record on saying and on having this opinion, but I still have to have cooked food in the morning because that is the law. I believe. So I am a vegan, sadly, full of regret, but yet I persist.
But moral.
So I put a little bit of just on my thing. First thing, fried plantain.
Oh,
essential.
Yeah, that sounds
okay,
amazing.
Essential. Now, I used to have scrambled egg and I would ordinarily say it should be scrambled egg because any other egg is too greasy and sloppy. Mm. However, you can scramble tofu, just put a bit of soy sauce, salt and turn it yellow and it's not bad, guys, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So don't knock it till you tried it. So I would replace it with scrambled tofu. I'm with you with the spinach. So what I do is I steam my spinach and mushrooms together because it's just like, and then when you steam the mushrooms, obviously, there's loads of water, so you just literally put them in a steamer and just let the water drain down. You do like the spinach, and the water drains down. It's not so like mushy. So I've got spinach, mushrooms, tofu, fried plantain, and of course, two triangle cut. Must be triangle. Don't give me cooked breakfast with square toast like some
none of this square
peasant. No, I want triangle cut brown bread, and I don't have time for people. It's very important that white bread for me sort of tastes quite chemically. It tastes chemically, isn't it? Like you get to a point in your life when you just have to say, you know what, it's got to be brown bread, really. It doesn't have to be granary. I'm not up myself. You know,
I'm chill. I'm pretty chill.
Any brown bread's fine.
Yeah,
just not.
It could be a King's meal. I'm not fussy. But yeah, that would be fine. And if you know the purists out there are going, what is this? There's no meat on that. I will swap out for the purist, I would swap out the spinach for a good veggie sausage. Cauldron do a lovely vegan sausage.
So that's nice.
For the people who are about to... I'm going to tweet that this. Don't.
I can't call that a falling, right?
So my partner, my other half's a veggie, and she does the scrambled tofu, and she makes a big batch of it like on a Sunday and freezes it for a breakfast through the week. So she does she has it with like... really garlicky cherry tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. And then, it's very flavourless. So when you, but that's good because it means you can have really strong stuff with it. Yeah. It's nice, man. It's nice.
Yeah. I love tofu. Love it.
And we joke about me liking meat, but I eat a lot of veggie stuff and some of it is...
You'll just eat whatever's put in front of you, Josh.
I'm the cook in our house. I like a lot of veggie stuff because you know what? I think me and Alice, we've talked about this before. You have to put more effort in. You have to actually think about it. Whereas I think a lot of people just go, oh, the meat will do it for whatever. But I think a lot of veggie stuff, it's like you have to think about it and so it ends up better.
But I think that's a cultural thing because I'm of Indian, Ghanaian and West African heritage. In many ways, it's kind of like British and European cuisine is very meat and veg. Mm. So when you take out the meat, there's only veg left and it's like, oh, that's meat. I can't live off that. Whereas I come from cultures where we do lots of curries and stews and like really thick soups and stuff. So when you take the meat out, there's still a lot of substance there. Mm. Particularly being Indian, I mean, you go to an Indian restaurant, the meat is... second, it's not the star of the show ever. It very rarely is. So I think that's also, a bit of privilege I have in my case because I've got all these kind of I've got all these sort of, all this food culture in me though. I don't like, I was brought up on dal. I was having dal for dinner when I was as a three-year-old. So it's a little easier for me. So I'm very sympathetic actually to people who turn to vegetarian and veganism, but they don't come from necessarily like a culture that meat is the star. Do you know what I mean? It's the Britain's Got Talent, and the winner is a pork chop. That's European cuisine in a nutshell. It's a very meat based culture, so it's hard to get out of it. But once you force yourself to like relearn food, it's actually right. It's all right, man. Come join us.
Do you go like hot? Hot, spicy.
I do have quite hot food. And my daughter is constantly going, it's too spicy! It's too spicy! I'm like, oh yeah, of course it is. Yeah, I didn't cook with your toddler. You can't eat this. Yeah.
This is not for your taste buds. I'm so sorry.
My food is quite hot. Yeah, my partner does spend a lot of time sweating. We've got a flannel. But yeah, that is a gift and a curse, I think, of my upbringing.
Okay, so we'll move on then to talking about this week's film, which is Clockwise from 1986. So spoiler warning if you've not seen a film from 1986. If you haven't seen it before, as I hadn't seen it before, then basically a little rundown of the plot. So John Cleese plays a very uptight headmaster of a school. He's turned the school around. He's done a really good job of being headmaster of the school, so much so he's been asked to be the head of the headmasters union, which is, I think he would, in the plot of the film, he would be the first person from a state-run school to do that role, and he's on his way to Norwich to chair this meeting with all these other uppity posh school headmasters, and essentially everything goes wrong for him. It turns into a big farce and a road trip and all that at the same time, and that's what it's about really. I don't think we need to go into it any further. Now Athena, obviously you came on to pick this. Why did you pick it other than the fact that we asked to come on and pick a film?
I was trying to think of a film that I like that no one else likes, but I was going to do Matrix Revolutions because I think everyone told me it was a terrible film. Don't watch it. Then I saw it on Sky and I thought, it's flawed, but it's better than the last one, which was dog shit.
The fourth one that came out at Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I thought even more and I thought, you know what, there's just one film that I see on TV, like literally on, it's one of those Channel 3 movies that is on telly and it's this film. And I don't think I've ever actually said out loud that I think this film was hilarious. Even though I know when I see it on the listings, I'm like, oh, I've got to catch this, you know, whatever part of the movie is on whilst it's on. I always think, you know, it's one, if it's on and I got the time, I will sit myself down in front of it. And I've never out loud said I think Clockwise is really funny. And I don't know, I didn't know if people had heard of it. I didn't know if it was a famous film. I knew nothing about this film other than the fact that it's on at Christmas, normally on ITV2, probably now on ITV4. and, you know, it's
got that sort of vibe. Yeah.
I think it's one of those films that on the surface, because things have changed so much in terms of I guess what we can call our political dialogue, and particularly John Cleese, he's not the man we used to know, is he? He's not the man we used to know and love. So people might have either decided to stop thinking about this film, or maybe wouldn't visit it because they'll be like, it looks ghastly. But it's, you know, if you just saw a screenshot of it, you'd think, oh my God, what is this, you know, Confessions of a Window Cleaner style movie. It's like that. But it's really funny. So I kind of wanted to talk about it because I don't think you can deny. I always say when it comes to comedy, comedy is comedy. It's undeniable if it's good, you know, and I will stand up for this film and say it's actually undeniable. It's very, very funny. I don't know what you thought of it, but it makes me laugh so much.
Yes, so I'll throw my cards down on the table early. First things first, I'd never even heard of this film, and I did really enjoy it because I'm quite a big Monty Python fan. So that was the first. So watching Monty Python was the first time I remember really getting into comedy and loving comedy. And then from there, you know, you get into other things and more diverse things and all that sort of stuff. But so obviously I do like John Cleese and all they all went off and did their own thing afterwards. But I'd never heard of this, which is funny because it's just before A Fish Called Wanda was made, which I know he wrote. But what about you, Alice? Had you seen this before? Had you heard of it?
No, hadn't seen it. Hadn't heard of it.
Is that the first time this has happened?
What, for both of us?
Yeah.
You know what? I just feel old. It's not because I've got an elite film knowledge. I'm just an old woman. And this is some old woman film from the 80s.
Maybe the Beast, maybe, Josh.
Oh, yeah. We had a list of suggestions, didn't we, for a film that made like a quid at the box office and we'd never heard of it.
So did you pick this one because you think it's underrated or underseen or a bit of both?
I don't know. Because I've never spoken, I genuinely have never said out loud that I think this one's hilarious. I don't know if people have heard of it because I've never said, have you seen Clockwise? And had people say, yes, I have, no, I haven't. And I don't know if it's underrated because I've only ever seen it on telly. So I don't, but I do know that it never comes up in film conversations because I like my movies as it happens. And it's never really come up. I've never seen it in a Best of British list. When people talk about, I don't know the actors that are in it apart from John Cleese. And people talk about him and his back catalogue. They, you know, they mention A Fish Called Wanda and obviously all the Monty Python movies. They never mentioned this. And it was only on reflection that I thought, I wonder if this is a kind of a hidden gem that probably, I would find it hard to believe that a film made like that of that time wasn't critically acclaimed. I don't know if it was or wasn't.
Interesting.
I think that's interesting at the point you raised there, because essentially I think what you're saying is it could be both. It could be underseen and underrated. But based on that, so yeah, I mean, I can't believe there was a John Cleese film I hadn't heard of. Not that I'm not like a number one John Cleese fan, but I do really like Monty Python. So you've never seen it before, Alice? Let's get stuck into it, Alice. What did you think? What did you like about it?
So I mean, I thought it was pretty funny, to be honest. I felt like the gags throughout and the whole farce elements, I thought they were really well put together. I thought that the story unfolded really well. Like for me, because at the beginning, You're not 100% sure where it's going to go, right? So I didn't know anything about, is it going to be, you know, is it like a social drama? Is it about helping these kids? Is it about privilege? Like, what is this about? And then it's the moment when John Cleese's wife sees him at the petrol station with that younger girl and they're driving to Norwich that I was like, ah, this is what it's about. So then you've just got this wonderful thread, these wonderful threads of narrative of misunderstanding that just go on throughout the film that I just thought were all really funny and just really well crafted and put together. It's similar for me. A few of the British films that we've done, when I think about things like Submarine or Happy Go Lucky, it's a really, really simple concept, but executed in a really brilliant way. Mm. And I felt the same with this. I thought the score was brilliant as well. Now, slagging off a lot of the scores of the films we've been doing recently. You know, they're either just, they're too emotive or they're too sort of guiding and they just do my head in. But this one, it really joined up the scenes together quite nicely. And there would be like, they were quite sort of familiar and constant motifs, but it would change depending on the situation. And it felt like just a lot of work had gone into the score. Like you could imagine like them really kind of sitting down and composing and getting like a proper orchestra and just sort of doing it.
It wasn't your bog standard 80s comedy score. You know, you got like the...
No, it wasn't.
like that sort of like,
like, yeah, Benny Hill kind
yeah, like
of,
this is a comedy, you know, it's a comedy.
It's funny you mentioned that because I'd never considered that. Do you like Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah,
yeah. So what's really good is like at the end of every episode, you get that do, and it's always so appropriate for it, just captures that you're a dickhead, Larry. You know, do, and it's very much a little flavor of what that film is like. It just captures the energy of this really chaotic man who's fundamentally an idiot, and all this stuff is happening. And it's none of his fault. None of it is his fault, by the way. But at the same time, it is his fault because he's an idiot. And it's just really lovely.
It was a real, as well, who's who of, like, kind of old, forgotten British actors. So, like, you had the dad from The Queen's Nose in there.
No.
I don't know if that means anything.
Right. Yeah, so that was 50p pence and you rubbed the Queen's nose.
Yeah, so he was the one that the student was having the affair with.
Oh, the music teacher.
So I see him and I was like, I know this guy.
You recognised him from somewhere.
I have to dig deep into my brain to find out who this guy is. And I was like, is that the dad from Queen's Nose? It's like, don't know how I got that. Jim from EastEnders is in it.
Yeah, Jim Brannan from EastEnders.
Laura's mum, who I thought was brilliant in this and so, so funny. She was someone, but I can't remember who. And then the woman who plays the woman on the bench in Afterlife is also in it.
Penelope Wilton. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, she is in it. She's very, very, she's very, very young in it.
Yeah, yeah. But, so like every 10 minutes, I was like, I know that person, I know that person, I know that person. Yeah.
I still think of her as Sean's mum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I can only think of Penelope Wilton as Sean's mum from Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, that's what Ollie said, first of all. And I was like, nah, she's from something else as well, man, I'm telling you.
Alison Steadman in there as well. Gavin's mum from Gavin and Stacey, who's also in
Shirley
Valentine, is in this. She's very young, but yeah, she's in it.
Of course. And she was brilliant as well. Yeah. I actually thought it was quite a nice sort of a low-key British ensemble.
Yeah, and a lot of them playing very stereotypical roles. Having it off with someone, or mistress,
old ladies,
or mum,
naughty
student. Yeah.
Three old ladies.
Like I said, it's very of its time. Please don't watch this if you want to cancel shit. Like it's a movie made by a bunch of British people in 1986. Okay, it's not gonna. I think it fails the Bechdel test all day long. Just let's think about it as comedy writers, guys. Let's look at the script and the escalation and the comedic arc and all that stuff.
The story development and how the narrative unfolds, definitely. Yes. So one of my favourite things about this was just seeing things that are kind of iconically 80s, but mixed in with things that are still around today. So it was like a really weird mix of obviously all the vehicles were very 80s, all the hairstyles, all the costumes, but the buildings and all that look exactly the same. Like the road signs all look exactly the same. The hospital signs, because they go to a hospital. And I was like, all those signs just look exactly like hospital signs do now. And I was like, how has this not fucking changed in 40 years? How have we not updated the hospital signs?
That school looks like my school. Like every depressing grey British school. You think, it could be anywhere.
That just kind of evoked a really interesting feeling, kind of like a weird sort of nostalgia, but like not really.
It's like watching old soaps. You know, it's like 100 greatest TV moments, and it's Angie divorcing Den, and you're like, sort of looks like that. Sort of looks a little bit like that, doesn't
definitely.
It?
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of shooting on location. Like, I think that was all a location shoot, as would have been the case with a lot of movies back in the day. And that brings it to life a little bit, which I really like.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives it a bit more
definitely
colour.
adds that realism. Very, very sort of British-y, kind of almost quite gritty realism. What about you, Josh? What were some of your favourite things about the film?
So I really enjoyed it overall. I mean, like, to expand on what you both said a little bit, it's a simple idea done really well. It's essentially a farce. You know, this could be a play. A man is trying to get from A to B and things go wrong and that's it. Like you said, Alice, it spins quite a few plotline plates really well, and they do a lot of good stuff about misunderstandings. So, you know, his wife sees him with a student in the car. He's asked the student to take him to Norwich. She automatically assumes he's there having an affair, so goes after them. And it's this thing of they all converge in the same location at one time, and things just go wrong. Everything goes wrong. Everyone loses their heads. As it did reminded me of classic farce and that sort of thing. I think it's quite absurd as well in places. I quite enjoy that it's a little bit cartoony. So like I said then, not only do you have her misunderstanding that he might be having an affair, but you have this idea of like, there's bits where characters are going in doors as other characters come out of other doors. It's like watching Scooby-Doo, you know, where the way characters just, if you ever see a farce on stage, that's what it's like. You do get, you know, a lot of Hello Vicar trousers down, one out of one room, someone falls out of a wardrobe, you know. It's all very, very specifically directed. Like, it's really difficult to direct this sort of thing, and you've got to get your timings right.
I think that they
did that. John Cleese is really good in this. I think he does elevate it with his performance. I am, as I said, a Python fan. So he is the best at doing repressed, snobby English bloke with a stick up his arse, brought down a peg or two, then deteriorating into flustered madness. I mean, it's not far from Basil Fawlty in this film. Let's be honest, but you love to see it, and the fact that he's so repressed and tall and gangly and stiff makes it all the funnier when he's given quite a good sort of physical performance in places. And as he deteriorates, you know, he looks madder and madder. He goes from wearing a suit and tie to a monk's garment to, you know, all sorts as it goes on. And he pulls it off really, really well, I think. And like you said, Alice, the supporting cast, particularly Alison Steadman, I thought were really good. I mean, it's nice to see her in something because I've not seen her in much when she's younger. I've only really seen her in Shirley Valentine, and then later on, obviously, she did Gavin and Stacey, and she's just done a show with Catherine Parkinson and Jim Howick, which I can't remember what it's called, but it's on iPlayer now. Overall, I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it's just a simple idea done really well. Man tries to get from A to B, and shit goes wrong, and he just loses his mind. I enjoyed it. So I think, like, what is it you particularly like about this film when you have watched it? Can you, because obviously you've never said it out loud before, so can you put your finger on it, or is it one of those things of like, I just like it?
It was laugh out loud funny. So I guess I'm not a big laugh out loud person. So anything that makes me laugh out loud is very precious to me. So like Father Ted makes me laugh out loud. Yeah. Now I think about everything that makes me laugh out loud is written by problematic people. So it's kind of like what I need to think about my deep seated prejudices. I think, or maybe being problematic is the curse of being very funny. I mean, I don't know. But it's a laugh out loud movie. That's why I always watch it. Mm. I love farce. I don't know if you're familiar with a book called Three Men on a Boat.
Yeah.
But that's sort of, that's just bloody hilarious, isn't it? I think it's one of those things that people will think they won't find it funny. I've literally bought copies of that book for so many people. And I'm like, you're not going to like this, but I fucking swear to you, you're going to love it. And farce is... When we don't want to get too deep about it here, but we talk a lot about British culture. You know, what is British culture? And let's face it, if you saw the bloody parade, we don't know what it is. It's just I was like, is this a fever dream? Because there's some really, it's like the scene from Dumbo where he sees like, where he's hallucinating. I'm just like, what, Cliff, what's British culture? Okay, get Cliff Richard out. Like, is it really? But farce, if we really want to interrogate what British people do that other people can't really do, farce is very British. It's a British sensibility. And I think like Mr. Bean, for example, is like our biggest, and The Office, our biggest exports are kind of farcical things. Mrs. Bouquet.
Oh my God. Keeping up appearances. Yeah,
one of the best sitcoms ever made. I always say this, and when I say it to people, they go, yes, you're right, Athena. Because I'm always right, guys.
Actually, you're right.
Athena.
So this is like my kind of people. But it's farcical. So it makes me laugh out loud. I think there's a good argument for thinking about farce as being fundamentally British and something that we do really well. As I've gotten older and I've gotten into comedy writing as a job, it's a really great example of all the things you need to do to make something inevitably funny. It's inevitable if you take someone and just make his predicament worse and worse and worse and worse until they're in a field naked with a monk and a woman trying to seduce the monk it's not the monk, he's dressed as one, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's got and he's got to try and get this guy's kit off because he needs a suit. I mean, how do you go from I'm late for a meeting to I'm in a field, I'm in the woods with a woman that I'm not supposed to be with, but we're going to seduce the guy? I mean, it's just like assault, guys.
It's unraveling, isn't it? Yeah.
That's assault. If you're trying to get someone's clothes by seducing them, and then he gets his clothes and all that stuff. So it's that unraveling is lovely. It's what I aim for as a writer, I think. And I'm nowhere near writing a film as elaborate in its escalation as clockwise.
We could remake it.
You can't remake it. it's of its time, but it's certainly in spirit. The idea of thinking about it deeper, it works really well as a character, because this character, even though he is the Fawlty Towers character, it's fundamentally a man who's trying to escape his childhood, because we learn in his childhood he was this really scatty guy, and he's become this head teacher who's really defensive about working in a comprehensive school, and the only way he can deal with his guilt of being a scatty child who has ended up in a comprehensive school is by being a bossy time lord. Like, he's obsessed with keep being on time, so that runs through the whole thing. I have to be on time. I've got
9:20.
Yes,
like over and over in the beginning, isn't it?
And it's a wonderful study, I think, into the repressed Britishness, even if it realizes it is or not. It's a wonderful study into these assholes who just make our lives miserable for no reason whatsoever, because they all need therapy. But instead of getting therapy, he's just decided to get himself obsessed with punctuality. So on a character level, that's just really that. Obviously, as a kid, I just found it funny. You know, when you're a child, you think it's really funny that I just used to think it was so funny that his wife thinks he's having an affair with this woman. It used to make me cry with laughter. You've got it wrong. He loves you. But it used to make me laugh a lot. I don't know. It's just so funny. I try to find more to say about it.
That's a really good point. to find something in it as an adult different from being a child. I think that's a sign of a lot of good comedies. We talk about this in other stuff. A lot of really good family films get that balance right, and this isn't really a family film, but get that balance right between jokes for the kids that you find really funny, and then when you get up you go, oh, never noticed that before, oh god, like, and but all those little things for the adults that the kids don't get. And I don't mean like rude stuff, but like there's a few things we've done, isn't there? Like we did like Road to El Dorado, which is like an animated family film from about 2000. And that's like, I remember watching that in the cinema when I was about 10, thinking, really, it's really funny because they're sword fighting and they keep banging into each other and all that. And then when you're older, there's loads of jokes in there. When you're adult, you're like, oh yeah, like they're basically like they're trying to get laid, like. but you don't realize it as a kid. Well, you shouldn't really if you do. Call someone. So I think that's a really good point, and that's always the mark of a good comedy if it's aged well, because it's laid in that way. So I think because I didn't see it as a kid, I couldn't comment on that. But I do think it's obviously clear that it's stood the test of time in your mind, which is good.
Yeah, that scene that you spoke about where they're going in and out the doors and it's all like really well timed. Yeah, that used to make me I used to roll around. And obviously now, as a child, that's really funny. As an adult, I'm like, oh, that's really skilled.
They're so smart. Yeah. Who was timing this? Oh my God, the cameraman. This is amazing.
But it's like when I was a kid, I used to really like this Charlie Chaplin movie. This Modern Life?
Modern Times.
Modern Times.
Yeah. It's a classic.
It is. But as an adult, you're like, this guy's a genius.
Oh, like, gotcha.
He's a dancer. He's literally, his choreography and his movement is just out of this, it's out of this world. But obviously when I was like, you know, younger, it was just a really farcical kind of nonsense, things falling over, he's stepping on brooms, they're hitting him in his face, you know, and all this stuff. So yeah, it's nice to grow up with something.
Okay then, so we'll move on then to talking about things that we didn't like or that we would perhaps change about the film. Now, I don't get the impression this is going to be a massive long segment, Alice, but was there anything for you, anything you would change? Anything you
for
didn't
me,
like?
So there were just two things really that I picked up on. So, one of them was just that some of the audio was a bit shit, like some of the dubbing, some of it was a bit out of sync, like you were hearing the words, you were seeing their mouth move, and it was just, like, it was bad, it didn't line up. But that's not going to ruin a film for me. The other thing was that about maybe two thirds of the way through, some of the pacing, I feel like, fell a little bit flat for me. I reckon it could have been maybe 10 minutes shorter, maybe 10 or 15 minutes shorter. So the part really was after they'd driven into the field. And so you've got the whole sequence where obviously he gets really muddy and then he turns up at the monastery and then he gets changed. And from that sequence until he makes it to the place in Norwich, to the headmaster's guild or whatever it might be, that just felt really long. And I feel like you could have knocked a few minutes off that and it would have had still the same impact. But that was pretty much it, really. Like, I had a heck of a ride. I thought it was funny. It was fun. And, yeah, I thought it was pretty good, to be honest. What about you, Josh? Anything you didn't like or anything you changed?
The pacing thing was in my notes as well, sort of maybe about, like you say, about an hour in. And it's only, it feels like it loses its way for 10 minutes or so, and it drops a little bit, but then it does pick back up towards the end. Other than that, there's two points I've got. The first one, it's really fucking depressing to see how cheap fuel was when they're at the petrol station.
Oh, I missed and that. You're like, how
and
much
it's like,
was it?
It's like it's something, and it's like 40p or something.
Oh,
and you're like,
oh good
God.
Old days, Christ.
But even when you see stuff from 10 years ago and they go past a petrol station, you're like, oh God. And I know, you know, wages are different and all that, but it's still depressing.
Not much.
Four
not
weeks
much
ago, mate. 4 weeks ago, I was paying £1.20 for my petrol. That's talking about 1986. April. In April, my petrol was £1.40. Yeah. If that. So, it's times are tough.
Times are changing.
Times are changing.
One of the only things I remember enjoying about COVID was because I still had to work. I could fill my car up for 30 quid. And I was like, this is great. And I'm thinking, it's not great, but you know. It was just beneficial to me.
This is going to last forever.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing was, I was trying to wrap my brains of like, is there anything I would change about it? I suppose from my own point of view, I'd like to have seen maybe a little bit more exposition about why he was so organized. So you get a bit of discussion about, oh, he was scatterbrained and unorganized when he was a kid. But perhaps maybe we could, I'm not saying as far as a flashback, but something, like something happened, you know, I was so organized to this point that this happened. So then from there on, I thought I'm going to be organized unless I missed something.
Oh, but I just, yeah, I always assumed it was because he was a messy kid he was, and then I added the fact that he was a bit chipping his shoulder about being ahead of a comprehensive, but actually you're absolutely right. A bit of an origin story of it for him would have been really fun to explore.
I think the opportunity there as well would have been when he's trying to use that phone box and obviously his ex-girlfriend comes out and starts talking to him, and when she joins the narrative, because she knew him when he was young, right?
Yeah.
When he was a kid, or at least very, very young.
I think they're meant to have dated when they're quite like teenagers or something.
Yeah,
I think.
So maybe that could have been the opportunity then, because you're bringing in this character that knew him all those years ago. Maybe she could have said like, oh, do you remember when your dad beat the shit out of you because you were so messy or something? Do you know what I mean? And it's part of that trauma that he's dealing with is by being, do you know what I mean? Maybe not something that dark, but that would have been the opportunity there, I reckon.
Yeah. But something like that. But that was just from my own personal point of view. But you know me, Alice. I like a character story.
Oh, it does. Don't you just.
But no, overall, I think overall, pretty positive stuff there.
I'm pleased that it's not just me. Wouldn't it have been awful if there's this really funny film and you'd be like, Athena, that's the most racist shit we've seen in our life. What are you talking
about?
Can you
pick something else,
please? Yeah, like,
please?
We can't. I was really nervous watching it again. I was like, is it that funny? It was just a really horrible...
Is this going to be bad?
Yeah, Was it as funny this time? Like, you still laughing?
It's still... Yeah, I mean, now I'm jaded. You know, it's actually the first time I watched it since... being a comedian, I've not seen it for years, and nothing's as funny once you start being a comedian. Do you know what I mean? Like, no. It's just it's like,
is anything funny anymore? Very. Or have you ruined it?
It's
have you ruined comedy for yourself?
I've absolutely ruined comedy for myself. Oh, if I find something funny, it's I just blink. I don't even laugh anymore. No, it's not that bad, but it's definitely, I see what they did there as opposed to that's funny. Oh yeah, I see exactly. That was a nice callback.
Mm. Become a scholar more than an audience
but
member.
Yeah. You just, you're around so much comedy, you kind of become very conditioned to it, sadly. But it was still as funny. Like I said, the escalation, everything, every 5 minutes, something goes wrong. And that's a very big hit rate for, you don't really get that in comedies now. Now it's sort of gross out comedies. There isn't much writing in movie comedies now, as much as I'd like to see. Like something like A Fish Called Wanda, you just wouldn't get a movie like that now. And so
it's a lot more like dialogue or set piece driven now, isn't it?
And just like, or just like wacky characters. So it's, you know, just that whole, what's going to go wrong every 5 minutes. For an hour and a half or however long it is really I just can't think of anything with that kind of hit rate.
You can see in Another Life, if this I don't know why it isn't or why it didn't become a big hit at the time, but you could see in Another Life this being a classic along the lines of A Fish Called Wanda or another like classic comedy, I don't know, something like, say, American, like Coming to America or something like that. You know, sometimes it does depend on, was it in the right place at the right time? Did they get the marketing right? That sort of thing. And perhaps in Another Life, they'd have put a bit more money behind this and it would have been a big hit.
John Cleese needs to stop tweeting. You know, otherwise we're never digging this one out, John. You know, you got to stop tweeting. Otherwise, it's going to remain under that rock, sadly. And this podcast will be the only place where it gets its flowers. But its flowers it shall get. And, you know, if people want to come for me for it, they're more than welcome.
Was there anything that you didn't like about it?
I think I mentioned it, like, you know, it's very kind of, the women are very squealy and, you know, it doesn't have the best, I mean, it has a wonderful cast of women and comedic actresses, you know, and all that stuff. But it's very, all movies and all British movies made in the 1780s are just, you know, the women were just, they just played women.
You're a mother and that's it.
But they do have a lot of agency still and they move the story along, which I do enjoy. And they are very much implicated in things go wrong for this dude, which I enjoy too. But there's not a lot I would, you know, I've never looked. I mean, it's funny you say the origin story stuff because I'm like, I want to see this guy's parents.
A prequel.
I want to see the kind of oppression that he was. Yeah, right. I should write that. I want to see the kind of oppression that he was living under to turn into this kind of man.
Could do a whole farce out of that.
Definitely. So that's probably, I'm in agreement with all of your comments, but certainly the origin story one, that definitely.
Okay then, so we'll move on then to having a little look at the critical reception before we ever decide whether it's underseen, underrated, where are we going to put it? I've got a bit of an inkling. So how do you think it did, Alice? Critically, how do you think it did? What are we looking at? The scores, what are we looking at?
Oh, interesting. So I'm trying to remember what Rat Race got, right? Because this reminds me a little bit of that. Not John just Cleese, because John Cleese is in it. I mean, it's probably that a little bit, but... So I'm trying to remember, like, if the critics liked it and the audience didn't, or if it was the other way around. I reckon the critics probably did like it, right? So okay. I reckon we're probably looking at a mid-6. Okay. So I'm going to say a 6.4/64%. And I reckon that's what it got. And that might be what I would give it.
Right. Okay. Okay, not bad, not bad. Athena, do you know? Have you looked at it or do
no,
you
I haven't. I've no idea, but I'd guess. I think people would have liked it at the time. I think it would have hit the spot. Let's say 8.
8.
Ooh, very generous.
So at the time of recording, IMDb gives it 6.6, so 66%. The audience on Rotten Tomatoes give it exactly the same, which we don't get very often, of 66%. But the critics give it 80%.
Wow.
So it was critically well received. So that averages out at 70%, more or less exactly.
Oh, there you go.
So what do we think? Yeah.
But I think if you... It is very... Humour is very culturally specific, which is kind of what I was trying to say earlier. And it's, if you're not into, IMDb is obviously, it's very American and international and whatever. So if you're not into British kind of, having a laugh, love 6.5 pandas and all Morty Vicar or whatever, if you're not into all of that, you're going to really struggle. I don't even know what that, I don't even know what that means, you know, all that hubba hubba nonsense. But if you, you know, you might struggle to, and I think a lot of people would come to John Cleese thinking Monty Python, and that's a very specific. I mean, it's very weird. I really like the Life of Brian, but I struggle with a lot of the other Monty Python stuff. It's quite surreal. Like The Parrot's Dead, right? I don't, okay.
So
it's not surreal humour at all, although it has surreal bits in it. It's very much kind of...
It's very British, isn't it?
Classic,
like you say. Yeah.
Comedy. This is a joke, guys. It's undeniably a joke. And if you don't get it, it means you don't find it funny, but you definitely identify it as a joke. So if you're coming for, you know, Monty Python stuff, you know, it's not really there.
Perhaps that's why the critics score it so high then, because I bet the critics score is probably pulled from the critics that reviewed it. And I bet the critics that reviewed it were predominantly British, because I can't imagine this particularly travelled over to the States.
I can't see the Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah, maybe that's why. But so what do we think then, Alice? Is it underrated? Is it underseen? Is it both? What would you say?
So I personally don't think it's underrated, but I would definitely say that it's underseen. Mm. I think you're a pretty good benchmark for me, and the fact that you hadn't
if I've seen it or not.
Exactly, yeah. You've seen a lot of films,
right?
You've
got no life, right? You just watch films, you loser.
You've seen more films than I have, and because you hadn't seen it or heard of it, and I hadn't seen it or heard of it, I reckon it's probably a bit underseen, you know?
Okay. So I would say it's definitely underseen. Because I'm not saying I'm the benchmark, but I haven't seen it and hadn't heard of it. But I've not really heard it in conversations. Like Athena said, I've not really heard it in conversation before.
It's never in any lists. Like if you're talking about films of the 80s or whatever, or like best British film, like you never see it in any of those lists.
And I bet if you went to someone on the street and said, name five John Cleese films. I bet a lot of people
as we're always doing.
Yeah, always. Just approach. Listen.
You there.
Yeah. Stop feeding that baby. Name five, John, please. So I'd say it is underseen. But also, I'd say it's probably slightly underrated for me.
Do you reckon?
So I think it is. I think it's better than 70%. Maybe a mid-70s or just above. What about you, Athena?
From what you're saying, that sounds about right, actually, for the scores. So the punters watch it, give it a 6. Fair enough. It's not everyone's cup of tea. And the critics watch it, give it 8. I think if you're a critic and you understand films and comedy, it'd be hard for you to say this isn't a good film. Mm. Even with the modern lens of kind of, you know, the modern progressive lens where we might do things a bit different. So I would say I was really surprised you hadn't heard of it, actually. Underseen. Underseen. It's probably respected as it should be, but it's not seen as it should have been.
So there we go. Then we'll put it in the underseen and underrated vault, which there isn't many films in there which fit both categories. It's normally one or the other. Athena, thank you very much for coming on and talking to us about Clockwise.
Thank you for having me. It's been fantastic.
what can everyone who's listening look out for? Where can we see your stuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, wonderful. So if this is going out in the next 3 weeks, I'll be doing a host and a show called DMs Are Open, which is on 4Extra.
Yes.
BBC Radio 4Extra, I should say. Spelt without the E, which is confusing because you'd expect to have the E because it's Radio 4. No, guys, it's 4Extra for the youth.
extra.
So yeah, right, I think X Factor, but 4Extra. But
it's
also on BBC Sounds, and you can listen to it repeats on Radio 4 too. And I do lots of bits and pieces, you know. So I would just find me on Twitter or Instagram, say hello, and tell me about how awful I am amplifying the work of a racist.
What's the premise of My DMs Are Open? What's the deal?
Oh yes, it's an open submission sketch show. So if you are interested in writing comedy, if this inspired you to write comedy, you can write sketches about anything that's happened either in that week or anything that resonates in the news. So you can write about like politics if you want, but you might want to talk about climate change or Gen Z stuff, or you might want to talk about the cost of Freddos and whatever you want. as long as whatever your topic does makes someone do that, you can write a sketch. pitching it. So it's a successor to News Jack, which you may be familiar with. News Jack was tied to the news cycle. DMs are open. It's not, because we're quite lazy and we don't like reading the news. But also we want you to write sketches regardless of what your interests are, really. So all the information is on the DMs are open at our website. And if you can't find that, you probably can't write a funny sketch, so I won't give you any more information. But DMs are open has a website on the BBC radio website thingy.
And you can follow them on Twitter as well.
Yeah, follow them.
As I do.
Oh, bless. And I have a link tree, you know, them link tree things. I got one of them. That's in the bio of my social media handle, so you can find it through them too. But I would love for you to, what I will say is, it's so hard to get stuff on the show, as it was so hard to get stuff onto News Jack. It doesn't matter, because it's like exercise. So just sit down, write whatever you want to write, send it in. We read it all. And we love it all. We love reading everything. So, you know, the more you write, the better you get. So please don't feel disheartened. Like, oh, I can't get anything on the show.
The battle is trying, isn't it?
Yeah. Just knock it out. Just have a go. We want to get people writing. So,
well, thank you very much, Athena. So if everyone wants to check out your stuff, what's your Twitter and Instagram handle?
It's Athena Kablenyu, all one name, Twitter, Instagram. Occasionally I'm on Facebook, but generally I'm on Twitter and Instagram.
We'll make sure everyone will put links to all that in the episode description, and we'll put links out when this episode comes out. Thank you very much for joining us, and thanks for talking about Clockwise with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So there we go, another episode in the bag, another film in the underseen and underrated vault. Thanks very much to Athena for coming on. Do make sure you check out her stuff. Her DMs are open. It might finish before this goes out, but even if it does, get on BBC Sounds and check it out, because it's a great show. And as she said, it's not specific to the news, so it's still funny even if you've forgotten what happened in the news.
There you go, very helpful.
If you'd like to suggest a film for us to do in the meantime, it's filmsinthatpod@gmail.com. Other than that, we'll be back next week with another film. We're also on all your social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all of them really, aren't we, Alice? We're also on the television.
We are, Alice? We're absolutely everywhere. We're on the local TV network every Friday from 6 p.m. So if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, the Liverpool, or the northeast of England, you find us on Channel 7 on Freeview, or if you live in North Wales or South Wales, you can find us on Channel 8 on Freeview. We're also on Sky Channel 195, and that's across the country. You lucky, lucky bastards.
You are lucky. Are you? I don't know. I don't want to comment on your personal circumstances. All that remains to be said is thank you very much for listening. Thanks again to Athena for coming on, and we'll see you next week. Cheerio.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.